this is what you're fighting for. I mean, every day you're out there.
What they're doing is blowing people off.
If you continue to look the other way and shut up, then the oppressors, the authoritarians, get total control and total power. Because this is just like in Arizona, this is just like in Georgia. It's another element that backs them into a corner and shows their lies and misrepresentations.
This is why this audience is going to have to get engaged. As we've told you, this is the fight.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room, Battleground. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Okay, welcome. It's Wednesday, 20 March, year of our Lord, 2024. I want to thank Dave Bratt for being here both in the morning and the evening show. Dave, here's why I needed to bifurcate this, because we had such a jam show this morning. The underlying issue in this election right now, with everything else going on, is the economy, and particularly the future of the economy. And when we talk about the three converting factors, the invasion on the southern border, which is adding tremendous costs to our social welfare system, plus destroying our education system, the healthcare, and crushing wages for working class Hispanics to African Americans, as we had on the show this morning. Number two is the soon-to-be $50 trillion in debt, and now that's embedded. So even the talk about interest rates that happened today with the Federal Reserve is really, it's important, as it always is, but you've got this embedded massive debt that you got to that you have to refinance a third of it every year. Yep. The third is the geopolitical crisis, the beginning of the Third World War on the Eurasian landmass that every day sucks us in, and has things like supplementals for $60 billion to Ukraine, and the operating tempo of the carrier battle groups in the Red Sea, and what's happening in the South China Sea. It just adds more and more to defense costs. All of those combined add in. But here's the central thing, as you've picked it. With all the happy talk going on, it's the greatest economy ever and stock markets up, the underpinnings of the American industrial economy has always been productivity. That's how you can see what's happening. And you've done an amazing job to put aside the cont and the spin and the hype and get down to some very just basic numbers. So I want to take your time. This is why I love the 6 o'clock hour. It gives me more time to explore it. So it's, the floor is yours. You just take it, and we'll just roll through the charts as you want to see. But I want to give a preamble. You should give a preamble about productivity and why that is so important as a guide to, could we be going into more lost decades for America?
Yeah, well, let's. You just laid it out very well. The Oxford Don, I expect no less. So perfect intro. And economic growth really is the same as productivity. You'll see on the graphs coming up, those lines are the same for the past 70 years. So when you talk about economic growth, that is productivity. Because productivity, the definition is just how much stuff do you make per hour. Right. So it used to be able to picture, easy to picture this stuff. You know, how many automobile parts could you make per hour? How many widgets could you make per hour? That's productivity. And productivity has been going down for the past 70 years. And so economic growth can be basically broken down into three chunks. Manufacturing and capital investment is number one. And then human capital and education is number two. And then technological growth is number three. And so you just got done saying manufacturing, we're putting less capital in the hands of the American worker now. Manufacturing is declining. Capital investment is declining. And as a result, that part of productivity is in a shambles right now. On top of that, human capital, education, we have huge illiteracy problems now in K to 12 education. Our education system used to be just stunningly excellent in a cross-country comparison. Now it is not the envy of the world anymore. And then finally, technological growth, that has always been kind of the residual piece. It's very hard to measure. But right now, you're going to find in what I'm about ready to present, that part is problematic, but because technological growth is now tied to huge problems with the distribution of income. All right, that the dissemination of technology is not even making its way down through the top firms. The Magnificent Seven have captured technology monopolies, et cetera. And so there's the basic overview, right? The economic growth is made up of those three pieces. All three pieces are problematic right now. And then, as I said on the earlier show, this is the one you cannot escape. And that's why the numbers are going down, down, down. The left has been faking us out, right? We have a border invasion. They focus on the cheap labor. The Tyson plant is the perfect example of that. They're going to import refugees and cloak it in, hey, we're doing good deeds. Well, what are the people left behind going to do that you just displaced? What are they going to do? Go on, you know, you got just massive psychological problems, family problems that come to bear on American workers. And then you get welfare problems and addiction and unvirtuous cycles for the American people. And so the left has been able to cloak a lot of this stuff, right? The runaway government spending, the green deals, the border invasion, the endless wars, the debt just goes up, up, up. And as I said this morning, the Tea Party friends, the MAGA friends all say, Dave, when does this end? Well, the way it shows up is in productivity. So let's just get to the charts. If Denver wants to put up the first one, these will be pretty quick. I've put this one up probably 20 or 30 times on this program because it's so fundamental. And so there, what you're looking at there is productivity over the last 70 years. So the main point is we used to have way back in 1948 on the far left of that chart, labor productivity. And then real hourly compensation. As I said, these are the same thing. So what you're looking at is your lived experience. You're not imagining that things are getting worse. Your average hourly take-home pay is going down.
Sure. People would say, how in the 1940s or pre-1940s could that be a case? Because productivity is a function of how smart and hardworking your labor force is, right? It coupled with the technology and technological and process development. So how could you go back almost 100 years or 80 years and have it more? Aren't we a better educated society? We have more access to information. The internet's given you access to all the information known to mankind in its history. Technology, every day I'm hearing about technology improvements. So if that's the formula, if those are the inputs to get to the output, how can we look at a time that most people would say is fairly rudimentary as far as all that, and that be more productive, sir?
Yeah. Well, as you stated at the intro, and I wish we had Brother Navarro with, because this is his bailiwick, but the rough on manufacturing, we all know, we gave up the manufacturing base and sent all of those jobs over to China and the rest of the world now. That decimated manufacturing. Those were the high-paying jobs. Manufacturing, Henry Ford, you go back to that history, right? Productivity went through the roof with the assembly line. People were rich, the white picket fences and all this kind of thing. And then the human capital. Right now, the consultants would tell you that even at the college level, parents and kids don't put education in the top 10 reasons they want to go to college. Right. They want a good football program, a good meal court, good curb appeal, good reputation so you can get a job. And education, it, as you see at Harvard and the scandals taking place in higher ed right now intellectually, is just a disaster. People have not stuck to the jobs that lead to productivity. Everybody's doing gender studies and all this radical Marxist stuff for real. And it shows up in the data, the test scores, the NAEP international test scores are just flat as a pancake with all this increases in spending. And then finally, that third piece, technological growth, has not disseminated down through the people, right? We thought we're gonna have a dot-com bubble in 2000, 2005. We had a little productivity pop right there, but it wasn't permanent and it's way down. So now the kids are surfing the web, doing social media. China on TikTok, the number one profession there, kids. Want to take part in, according to the Chinese data, they want to be astronauts. When the TikTok version for the U.S. comes over, it's not restricted to any age group. It doesn't talk anything about science and technology. It's all social media and cultural rot. And our kids, the number one response that they want to be is a social influencer. And so that tells you the productivity kind of answer in a nutshell right there. The Chinese kids want to be astronauts, and our kids want to be social influencers. And so we can go to the next chart, Denver. The first chart shows the last 70 years. This next chart I've also put up several times on the War Room, and it shows that the next 30 years, productivity will be roughly 1.5%, right? Under 2% for the next 10, and then 1.5% for the next 30 years. And so if you look at that 70-year graph progression, you don't need to put it up, Denver. But we ended up kind of down at 2% range, 1.5%. A CBO is telling us, and so you got to say, scratch it, what do they know that we don't know? Why is productivity going to be stuck at 1.5%? Because of all the fundamentals we just got done listing. We're not putting capital in the hands of the American worker to enrich them. We're sending everything abroad and making it cheap and then hiring, foreign-born workers who took up all the new jobs for the past several years in the recent labor reports to take jobs from the American people. And so CBO has that long-run forecast based on the fundamentals. And then the next chart is the doozy. Denver, if you want to put up the next one is a multicolor chart. And this one requires a little explanation. So this is put together, and this caused quite a stir, by Robert Gordon, the leading productivity economist in the world, who's been doing this work for 40 years. And he's regarded as one of the 50 most influential people in the world by Bloomberg, right? So this is not a fluff piece from right-wing politics. This is a substantive research agenda that's been going on. He starts off with the kind of what he calls an optimistic vision of just assuming 2% productivity growth. Then he begins this modern project, what we've just been talking about, stripping out. And this is for the bottom 99% of the people. So what we're talking about will affect you. This is for everyone except for the 1% super wealthy. They're going to reap all the rewards from the technological piece. So here's what's coming at you. So we start off at 2%, then you strip out, for starters, the baby boomer demographic piece. That takes you down to 1.6%. Then you strip out the educational decline. That gets you down to 1.4%. Then you strip out the inequality piece we've been talking about, which has negative economic effects. That brings you down to 1.4%. Then you throw in more globalization, more loss of manufacturing jobs. That brings you down to 0.7. Then you bring in David Walsh and the higher energy taxes and losing our energy dominance across all sectors. And that brings you down to 0.5% productivity growth. And then finally, you throw in the consumer debt payments that you've been reporting on the war room, where the kids have a 20% interest rate and you have huge defaults now on credit, and firms are having credit problems. So all of that together, he calls these the major headwinds facing us. And by the way, he did not include artificial intelligence in here, which would even blow a wider hole in the income distribution figures. And he did not include the endless wars, which would bring productivity down to zero or negative. So you throw in all those headwinds, you start at 2% productivity, and he says it's plausible that productivity and long-run economic growth could end up at 0.2% by the recognized leader of the field in productivity. Some of the modern economists, Paul Krugman, says, my gut just tells me it's wrong, right? No numbers from Krugman, nothing, because this is devastating to the leftist agenda. This is not a political remark. This is an economic remark. But this is the managed decline. This is the chaos. This is the manifestation of the spiritual war we talked about on this morning's show. If the left used to be characterized by liberals, I liked having lunch with liberals. They were fun. You could at least argue about the data. They were usually wrong. They're optimistic. They're well-intentioned. And they decimated education, et cetera. But they did care about the kids. Who on the left, right, the Magnificent Seven CEOs, who's mentioned the kids in the New York City schools, the Boston schools, the Chicago schools, the San Francisco public school system? Where is any attention to the productivity of those kids and their future well-being? It's nowhere to be found. And so the last chart just kind of summarizes what's been going on, according to the leading Northwestern economist, Robert Gordon. And this thing is broken. The width of those blocks you're looking at, the green and the red, are very wide at the bottom because they took place from 1890 to 1972. So that's 80 years of high productivity growth. in the green, and then high economic growth in the red, which, as we've been saying the whole time, those are roughly identical. When you talk about productivity, you're talking about economic growth. And then you see a little blip, we're losing hours worked in the labor force. Then you get the 1972 to 1996, so there's about a 15-year period, and you see productivity going down. GDP growth is still okay, and labor force hours went up. But now we're moving toward the modern period, 96 to 2004, right? So 8-year period, there's your dot-com bubble with some technological breakthroughs with a cell phone. Some of it made its way into the workforce, made us more efficient. And so you see a nice spike in productivity there and a nice spike in economic growth, but a decline in workforce hours. Now, the next piece, which is smaller from 2004 to 2013, where this paper ended, is really the same as it would be going all the way up till today. So here's what you're looking at today, right? You're seeing productivity down at 1.3. You're seeing economic growth down at 0.76, less than 1%, and you're seeing a loss in worker hours as well. And so that's the trajectory we're on. I wish I had, I don't like coming on and giving this news, but it's a wake-up call because the policies on the war room are all correct. But we need you out there to spread the word on why they're correct. When you see that we've lost jobs to China, all of our manufacturing, not all, but a huge proportions of manufacturing, and it hurts the American people, then we need a new China policy. When you see K-12 education being decimated, it's clear we need new education policy, and we need to privatize it and give the money back to the parents who will do the right things by their kids. The only thing that's gone up with all the spending, right? LA, Los Angeles spending on education right now is $50,000 per student in Los Angeles, according to Heather McDonald at the Manhattan Institute. And so with $50,000, that's an Ivy League education, and the kids, 30-40% are illiterate. The only thing that's going up is paid bureaucrats who are enforcing leftist ideologies. They're not teaching Johnny and Mary reading, writing, and arithmetic anymore. And then technological growth, AI, artificial intelligence, Steve covers it all the time on the show. It's a scary piece. It's going to take place, right? The rest of the world's going to engage in it, even if we try to do the right thing. And that will have huge implications for even greater divides in the income distribution. So the New Yorks and the Chicagos and the San Frans, the people that Berquam interviewed on today's show, they'll be screaming louder. Hey, this is not a fair deal. And so in the end, okay. This is an ethical issue, not just economics.
I've got I just need to hold it for a few more minutes, but I got another bombshell to drop here. If I've done the math correctly, and this is for our audience, and we're trying to get people as smart as possible about the most significant issues of the day and not just throw out talking points. It's Gordon himself that recalculates this and thinks it could be 0.2% productivity, correct?
Yep.
I just want to make sure I've got the right author of that number.
Yep.
And he's the expert everybody turns to, correct? Both liberals and right wingers. He's looked at because in his project, when does he view that we will get to a 0.2% productivity? Because this year, the way we're going, we're going to be about 1 to 1.25 productivity, I think, or 1 to 1.5,
just in this
calendar fiscal year, right? 2024.
Yeah.
So when in his work, when does he get to potentially we get to 0.2?
Yeah, he ends that paper in 13, but he has that 0.2% as the productivity growth that will likely go out to 2032 and beyond, perhaps out 30 years. And so he's just saying, based on the trend lines, right? And the trend lines I showed you are not in dispute, right? It's been going steadily downhill for 70 years. And then CBO confirms those trend lines going down for the next 30 years. And then he confirms it and says, if you throw in all the headwinds and you take out the top 1% and all the gains that go to them, we're left with 0.2.
Yes.
Yeah.
0.2. Okay, which route? Okay, I just want to. So, and people should know, CBO means Congressional Budget Office. Once a year, they do a big analysis and forward. And people should understand that in their current, and this is why I want to get back to the macro models to make a point here. When CBO just did their big analysis and going forward, of which, you know, they're projecting $1 trillion to $1.5 trillion to $2 trillion deficits every year. They're the guys saying the $50 trillion is on the horizon, probably going to hit forward. So they're a little bit like, although they're center left, they're a little bit like Caesar's wife on the Hill.
Yeah, right.
When they did that, as we exposed and broke the story, they have actually embedded 10 million illegal alien invaders as part of the workforce. They actually say that this is how, you know, this is how, and that wasn't, you didn't get to that until you played 20 questions. I was watching a C-SPAN where they did a presentation. It's not the congressman, it's the congressional staffers that finally goes, yeah, well, you know, we do have 10 million, you know, immigrants, you know, new arrivals. That's driving costs down. My point to you is that as horrific as all these numbers are, there's two big games going. Number one, if we do get, and I believe you're right, with the trend of the 0.2% productivity, the crash comes faster and it comes harder. Because right now when people are talking about models, we're talking about 50 trillion, as bad as that seems, that's on a set of assumptions that are rosy in comparison to what reality is going to be. And every day we're getting more reality. The reason you saw the African-Americans that are, and they're the ones pitching the great replacement theory. I asked on this morning's show, that's not a Steve Bannon or a Tucker Carlson. This is these folks saying, hey, they're replacing us, right? When it gets to 0.2%, the explosion on debt, the need of a social safety net for more people because they're not going to be, there's not going to be this type of jobs around. This is not no longer a ticking time bomb. This is something that's up in your face that's going to happen. And here's what's different. We have been talking about lost decades like the Japanese 30 years, three lost decades in a row because of asset inflation and bringing that down. The whole thing with Rogoff and debt being over 100% of GDP, all of these warning signs. This is the most serious because this shows you could have a Weimar Republic type collapse. That literally, if you go down this path and continue down this path, and the big shots on, and when I talk to the guys on Wall Street, the guys supposed to be the tough thinking guys, I get 75% of those give me the happy talk of, well, artificial intelligence is going to bail us out. Technological advancement is going to come and bail us out. And I go, well, hang on. I said, not only is that not going to bail us out, that's going to exacerbate the problems for big sectors of the economy. One is going to be the coders, because I think the coders, the mid-range, which are 80% of the people, you know, just learn to code, they're the first guys that are going to get wiped out because artificial intelligence is going to do that. You know, they won't do the Mozart, they won't do the Mozart genius type coding, but everything else. Dave Bratt, we got a couple of minutes. This has been brilliant. Yeah. It's been sobering. Give me your closing thoughts on this.
Yeah, well, you just said Robert Gordon also weighs in. He's not as optimistic on the productivity gains from artificial intelligence. And, you know, he quotes other Nobel laureates. They say, I see productivity everywhere, except I don't see it in the data. So, you know, the cheerleaders on Wall Street, they're always in, you know, they're pushing up this bull market. It's all going to crash. We all know it's going to crash. And it's just a matter of when, right? When does the Fed stop printing money? When does the government quit doing massive deficit spending? When does the bond market call in the chips here? When does the rest of the world call in the chips? And as you said, this does not include the implications of having $1 trillion in interest on the debt right now and potential wars, right? We haven't included what happens if the Ukraine-Russia thing escalates somewhat. What if Taiwan becomes an issue? What if the Red Sea becomes an issue and it closes down world trade somewhat? Those are supply side shocks that aren't covered here. And it's also hard to cover productivity, right? You hear, well, we're going to use all this cheap labor coming in. But economics is about the full cost, what you can't see. And what you can't see is the decimation you're doing and the social costs that are going to spill over onto the hospitals, the drug units, the psychological care needed. That those are costs to your economy that are buried and are hard to measure. And that's what the economists will not cover because they don't want to ruin the they don't want to ruin the bull market.
Dave, what's social media? Where do people go to get these charts? You're going to put them up after the show.
Yep.
So where do people go?
Yep. Brat Economics on Getter. Brat, B-R-A-T, Economics on Getter. I'm out giving talks around the country. I got an email address there if you want to look me up and tell me what city you're in. And, of course, bring your young scholars to Liberty University. We'd love to have a visit with them and you as well. God bless. Thanks, Steve.
Dave's going to be in and out of D.C. this week. Maybe we're getting back over the war room.
Yep.
Dave Brat, thank you. Honored to have you on here. Great as usual.
Thanks, Steve.
Spiritual and the economic manifestation of that spiritual war. If you like this type of analysis, we pride ourselves on doing this. This is one of the reasons the show is so different. There's two things. Number one, Jim Rickards is now a contributor here at the War Room. He puts out the Strategic Intelligence newsletter once a month. If you like this kind of combination of geopolitics, capital markets, macroeconomics, national security, all of it, we strongly recommend you go take a hard look at this. Go to RickardsWarRoom.com. That's RickardsWarRoom, all one word, .com. For Strategic Intelligence, is put out by Paradigm Press. So make sure you go check it out. Also, you want to talk to people about precious metals. Birch Gold, we got a great working relationship with Birch Gold. We put out a number of documents over the last, three or four years. Birchgold.com/Bannon. But this is where you can get to Philip Patrick and the team. I think it's very important now for you to consider precious metals as part of your asset base, a part of your portfolio. Make sure you just go check it out. Find out why gold has been a hedge for 8,000 years of man's recorded history. As you can tell, it looks grim here in the United States. A financial crisis is brewing. It's going to engulf everybody. That's why you need to go to birchgold.com right now and talk to Philip Patrick, team, birchgold.com/Bannon. Back in a moment.
True or false? Using your tax refund to pay off credit card debt is a smart thing. Actually, that's false. DoneWithDebt.com published a brilliant strategy designed to let you keep your hard-earned tax refund and reduce or eliminate credit card debt. Most Americans owe thousands in credit card debt. In fact, Daily Mail's got a story that 56 million Americans carry credit card debt, and that debt will take years to pay off, if you pay it off at all. Done with Debt found that filing bankruptcy is usually not the answer, and taking out loans to pay off credit cards usually increases the debt. When you engage Done with Debt, their legal experts and skilled negotiators take on the credit card companies for you. Their winning strategies are designed with one goal: solve your debt situation quickly and permanently. First things first, chat with a Done with Debt strategist and explore your solutions. Some debt fighting strategies are time sensitive, so you'll need to move quickly. For a free consultation, visit donewithdebt.com. That's donewithdebt.com. Do it today. Take action. I want to warn you of a huge change that could be coming to our money and our bank accounts. First, think back to 9/11, shortly after the government pushed through the Patriot Act. This gave the government power to spy on innocent Americans by monitoring our phone and email and tracking our movement across the internet. Now, Jim Rickards, editor of the independent financial newsletter Strategic Intelligence and New York Times bestselling author, is warning about a coming event that could elevate this governmental surveillance to a terrifying new level. In fact, some of the guests I've had on the War Room believe that the government will soon expand their powers to track our every move. If we say the wrong things on social media, donate to the wrong causes, buy firearms, or even vote MAGA, the government may be able to shut us out of our bank accounts. I can't say for sure if this will happen, but it's an interesting and dire warning. Fortunately, Jim Rickards, an American patriot and friend of mine, has made it his mission to educate us on what he believes is coming and how to protect yourself from the possibility of programmable money. Watch Jim's warning video now before it's censored like I've been in the past. Go to RickardsWarRoom.com. That's RickardsWarRoom.com now to see the video.
Are you tired of progressive corporations and exhausted trying to keep up with all the virtue signaling when you're simply trying to buy products? Progressive corporate America continues to push messaging that further alienates conservative Americans all while eroding the future of the American dream. It's prominent all over the country. Companies like Starbucks strong-arming their customers to support abortion. Financial services like PayPal canceling customers for their political views. Makeup companies like Maybelline making a mockery of women by supporting transgender models. And beer companies like Bud Light forcing gender ideology on you when all you want is to enjoy a cold beer. Thankfully, we don't have to fund these companies any longer with our hard-earned dollars. With Public Square, we now have a solution. It's simple. Join the movement of millions of patriotic Americans who love truth, our country, and our Constitution at publicsq.com. That's publicsq.com. Public Square is an app and website where you can get connected to tens of thousands of businesses from all different industries that share your value for life, family, and freedom. Whether you're looking to buy coffee, find a new athletic clothing that knows what a woman is, and shop for clean skincare, or simply find a new restaurant in your community that won't lecture you about your political views, publicsq.com is your resource. Public Square also offers discounts to many high-quality businesses on the platform so that you can actually receive incentive for spending money with companies that don't hate you. Public Square is free to join as consumer or a business owner, and you can get started today at publicsq.com. Remember, either as a consumer or a business owner. Download the app now. That's publicsq.com, publicsq.com.
All this nonsense, all this spin, they can't handle the truth.
War Room Battleground with Stephen K. Bannon.
So I am resigning as president and leader of Fine Gael effective today, and will resign as Taoiseach as soon as my successor is able to take up that office. I know this will come as a surprise to many people, and a disappointment to some, and I hope at least you will understand my decision. I know that others will, how shall I put it, cope with the news just fine. That is the great thing about living in a democracy.
Okay, a kind of an earthquake in a country that we focus a lot on, not just because of my Irish heritage, because it is actually a bellwether for what's happening in the globalist takeover of the nation state. We're going to go from County Clare to Rome to the United States. We got great coverage here. We got Dr. Bradley Thayer's with us, Ben Harnwell's with us in Rome, and of course, the great writer and thinker and political activist Michael Walsh joins us from County Clare. So, Michael, just tell our audience, we covered pretty extensively this issue. You know, first the Irish passed, I guess it was abortion first, gay marriage second, and now this is the third one, how to break the traditional family. Walk us through what led up to this, because this was kind of a shocker, I think, except for guys like you that have been following this and really being an activist on this behind the scenes. Walk us through what led up to this and then what happened today.
Well, I think we start with the breaking of the authority of the Catholic Church in Ireland, which was basically overthrown within the past decade or so. That is, the hold that the church had on the people, the strength of the Irish Catholic version of Catholicism, that had to go once Ireland joined the European Union. And it joined because it had a gun to its head called the Lisbon Treaty, which the Irish population had previously rejected some decades ago, a couple decades ago now. And then they were forced to vote on it again until they got it right. And they finally, on the second vote, got it right. They joined the European Union. And ever since then, Steve, and this is the crucial thing, the church was deinstitutionalized, and the Irish leadership became responsible not to the people of Ireland or to the Republic of Ireland, but to the European Union. So Ireland, which, as you, I don't tell you, was suffered under British control for 700 or 800 years, it lost its language, it lost its religion legally, so Catholicism had to be practiced in the hedges. It lost its right to its own property, it had its houses torn down around its head, the people were expelled on effectively slave ships to the Caribbean where they or Louisiana where they worked as indentured servants. It lost 50% of its population within a couple of years, thanks to the man-induced famine. So all of this has stunted the growth of Ireland as a real country. It's worth remembering it's only been a state for 100 years, but it's been a nation forever. And it's a point that I keep raising here in Ireland, where I am now, and where I went back and connected myself with my own family and moved my family here to Ireland. So that's how much of a immigrant's journey I have made and the Walsh O'Brien family has made over the last century plus. It all came apart once it started EU. And then Leo Varadkar, who just resigned, is half Indian. He's outspoken homosexual. He's married to an American guy, I believe. He was the New Ireland, and they're very, very proud of the New Ireland, which is secular, which is actually anti-religious, pro-abortion. And we got gay marriage, we got pro-abortion. We had a referendum on taking the words mother out of the Constitution and woman and replacing it with some neo-LGBTQ language. And that was resoundingly defeated 2 weeks ago, just crushed. And it's the first time the Irish people have stood up since the Varadkar and co. came in, the EU came in and said, no more of this, this far and no farther. And at that point, we knew somebody had to walk the plank, and it was Leo, who was just in Washington 2 days ago, looking like a little lost lamb, trailing an obviously senile Joe Biden, who, P.S., isn't even Irish, he's only less than half Irish, around for St. Patrick's Day. So, to quote the musical Chicago, they had it coming. And now we'll see what they do next. One last thing. No one ever voted for Leo Varadkar to be the Taoiseach, that is the Prime Minister of Ireland. He was installed in a parliamentary coup, and then his successor will also be installed in a parliamentary coup unless the growing public pressure all day today, Twitter's been full of this, to call a new election is heated. But I don't think it will be.
Let me ask you before I go to Dr. Thayer, is that we had the situation with the illegal, with the immigrants in Dublin, I think, with the little girl a month or so ago, that had kind of a firestorm. But the overwhelming response to that is that the men and the mothers, particularly the mothers that tried to stand up for the little girls, were at fault. They're a bunch of racists. They're a bunch of nativists. They're the worst elements of the old Irish society. And then you've had this, and it seemed to me different than the abortion and different than the LGBTQ, the marriage vote, that they got a little bit arrogant. Was this because they were too arrogant and didn't press the case hard enough? Or are you seeing both in the Dublin situation with the moms and the people having enough of these girls being molested or just people bothering them? And also this vote for traditional Irish language or traditional language or just the English language about mothers and the concept of a mother is central to the family. Is it a real rising of what I would call a MAGA mentality in to make Ireland great again, particularly the original Ireland? Or is this they just are so arrogant they took it for granted this was going to be a blowout win?
No, they are arrogant. They refer to any of us, you're a demon over here, so congratulations. I'm a lesser demon, but we're referred to the far right. It's a term they use for anyone who disagrees with them is a member of the far right. So immigration has become a huge issue in this country. It's effectively untrammeled. People arrive here with no passports, no identity documents. They destroy them on the planes. They throw them away when they get on the planes. They come here, and the world is theirs for free. Ireland has now run out of space to put all the people that are coming here for free housing, a weekly stipend, free clothes, free this, free that, especially from the Ukraine, which the Irish government, in its infinite wisdom, has decided that in order to fight Vladimir Putin, they're going to make it attractive for Ukrainian draft dodgers, which Zelensky needs in his army, to come to Ireland, all expenses paid, forever. And at some point, people have finally decided they've had enough of this. The stabbing of the little girl in Dublin a month or so ago outraged everyone, but it was demonized as the far right reaction. That explosion that was seen after that little girl was wounded was not organized by anybody. The day it happened, you could see Twitter coming alive with people saying, we've got to protest this, we've got to stop this. But they're called racists. The most important thing to know is what this current Irish government wants is the new Ireland. The new Ireland is secular, it's multiracial, it's gay, it's every leftist wish on the planet is what they want to have happen. And the Irish people, especially out here in the countryside where I live among farmers and my relatives, have just about had enough of this, and you're seeing it. And I think Leo saw the handwriting on the wall and he decided to bail first. But it's important to know we're ruled by a coalition government of the two major parties. You talk about in America the uniparty, but here it's an actual fact. There are two parties, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and they joined together because neither could get a majority in the last election a few years back. And they still couldn't form a government without the Green Party, which is effectively communists. And they gave all the important ministries to members of this tiny party that nobody votes for. And the country is essentially ruled by the Green Party as the ministers of youth and children and tourism and all the various ministries. And the shameful thing is the leader of the alleged opposition party, Micheál Martin, his name is, said today, he thinks this uniparty has got to last out its five-year mandate, and he's not going to resign or he's not going to break up the thing. I call it the racket. Steve, as you know, being an Irishman like myself, if there's one thing we're good at, it's rackets. We invented Tammany Hall, effectively. Well, Aaron Burr invented it, but we perfected it. We know how to lie, cheat, and thieve better than anybody on earth. Well, right now, we're living the dream right here in the old country.
Unbelievable. Dr. Bradley Thayer, you've covered this for us extensively. Your observation, sir.
Well, I think Michael Walsh really got it right in his observations that the Taoiseach Leo Varadkar had to walk the plank as a result of the referendum now on March 8th. But that was a very important signal. Steve, you remember the New York Daily News headline, Ford to City Drop Dead, right, in 1975. Well, the Irish people gave that message to the Uniparty, as Michael Walsh puts it, or the racket, as he mentioned. The Ireland and Irish politics are going down the wrong direction. The political parties are not listening to the Irish people. It's not clear whether Sinn Féin will switch tact. Right now, it's fully in accord with the dominant parties, but we'll have to see whether there's the opportunity for Sinn Féin to take a more nationalistic direction in the future. I think the Irish people are also saying, like Lee Anderson in the UK, where Lee Anderson was a Tory, a Conservative Party member of Parliament, who switched to the Reform Party. And he said, in essence, he said explicitly, I want my country back, right? The reason why I'm leaving the Conservatives or the Chinos, Conservative in name only, to go to Reform was that Reform was actually fighting for the British people. Well, the Irish people, I think, have the same element there. They want their country back. They want to essentially free themselves from the tyranny of Brussels. And whether they'll be successful at that, it'll be a long struggle. Ultimately, they will be successful at so doing because the elites have misruled them, right? You really now have the tyranny of these second or third rate elites. And the events, for example, of November 2023, the horrible night where the Algerian who was living in Ireland attacked those innocents, the children and an adult. The rape gangs, Steve, that have been operating, of course, and just the high levels of crime. The Irish people are trying to send a signal to those in power. And those in power are just plugging their ears and saying, you know, we can't hear you. We choose not to hear you. And so it's a very a dangerous situation. Varadkar also said he wanted to get out before June, right? He wanted to give Fine Gael really the opportunity to get its sea legs back, to get on feet before you have local elections in Ireland and European parliamentary elections in early June. So that, to some degree, explains timing. But he had to walk the plank for the disaster of the referendum. But from the elite perspective, yeah, they don't want to change anything. And although they fail this time in the referenda, they're going to find ways to bring about the changes that Michael Walsh so well described in Ireland, to keep that going, to keep that moving without any change.
Ben Harnwell, to this point, the European parliamentary elections, we're spending a lot of time on that in June. I do agree with Thayer. That's one of the reasons he bolted or got thrown overboard. They got to focus on that. You have populist uprisings all throughout Europe. You have Nigel's now back, and he's returning to lead the Reform Party, and he's actually talking about maybe making a run at it this time. You have the farmers that in Poland overnight, you got the farmers that are throwing down hard, the farmers in Germany, Alternative for Deutschland. Is the overthrow of the church in Ireland, is that just taking out any kind of nationalistic? I mean, do you feel that Ireland will join this movement that's really pan-European right now?
Well, let's wait and see, Steve. As far as the Catholic Church is concerned, and its demotion in the place, the historic place of Irish society, it has a lot to blame for its own. It has a lot of responsibility to take. I think the Catholic Church, especially in Ireland, but we've seen it right across the Western world, lost a lot of credibility around 20 years ago, that it still hasn't restored due to the clerical, the so-called clerical sex abuse scandal. And that's something I think we as Catholics need to acknowledge. We didn't help ourselves. We didn't help our own voice in the public square with that, and that those abuses that went on for many decades. So, as a consequence of the demotion, if we can call it that, of the Catholic Church in Irish public life, the left have been able to, and I say the left, you know, also very strongly secularism, let's call it secularism, it's a more accurate term, has been able to infiltrate the two traditionally centre-right political parties in Ireland, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. What I want to say, here's my takeaway on this, because what happened in the referendum and then the manifestation of the consequences of that today, less than 2 weeks later, my takeaway is this. I mean, it's firstly, Steve, it underlines everything we're saying on the war room. This is important to point out about how out of touch our sociopathic overlords are. My takeaway, Steve, is just how surprised they were to find out how out of touch they were with that, with the double referendum result on March the 8th. Both of those came in around, I think, around 70%, 67% and 73% in those two results, on around about a 50%, slightly under 50% turnout. And the political establishment, which Michael Walsh and Dr. Thayer have both pointed out, all of the main political parties in Ireland supported yes on those results, all of them. Basically, the country voted no, and the entire political establishment and all the NGOs and all of civil society and what have you, they were all blindsided by this. That is my takeaway. These people are not only out of touch, they don't realize how out of touch they are. And as Dr. Thayer and Michael Walsh both mentioned, Leo Varadkar did check, he did name check the fact that these that he's leaving now to give 2 months to elect a new leader ahead of the European elections, the all-important European elections on June the 8th and June the 9th, of which our European sociopathic overlords are running scared. They are absolutely terrified because they know, Steve, we say this every day, but this is the proof, you know, this is the shock resignation day. This is the proof. These people, they know the grains of sand are running through the hourglass. They know their time is up.
Fantastic. Hang over a second. Mike Walsh, we got about 90 seconds. is a MAGA type party, or is a populist type party like Alternative for Deutschland or Sons of Italy? Is that, you're the expert, do you see that arising in our beloved Ireland?
No, because the racket will prevent it. We have the damnedest electoral system here, which the British gave us after the partition of Ireland back after the Civil War and the Revolutionary War, which is single transferable vote, a.k.a. ranked choice, which means you vote a whole list of people, and then it's interpreted by the vote counters to come out any way they want it. It's very hard for an alternative party, Steve, you and I have discussed this a few years back, to get on the ballot in the first place. There is no effective opposition. Since Harnwell just said, they were all in agreement about this, and they were blindsided because they've just got their heads so far up their arse, as we say here in Ireland, that they could not see this coming. But the system itself needs to be changed because it's not a real democracy. It's a Tammany Hall-style democracy in which everyone rewards everyone else with various ministries and perks, and the NGOs own this country. There's hundreds of them, and they get money from the government, and they advise the government. It really is a racket, Stephen. I must say, as the grandson of a Boston Irish politician, I can only look upon it with awe and envy to see how well the home country has learned the Irish-American lesson.
Michael, how do people get your latest book? Where do they go to get all your writings?
Oh, yeah, big news. It's now available for a pre-order. It's called Against the Corporate Media, 42 Ways the Press Hates You. And it is a sort of sequel to Against the Great Reset, which we published a couple of years back. It's 42 different writers on all aspects of media malfeasance. Everything that's been frosting you about the media for the last 10 or 20 years, it's in the book. And that's available on Amazon for pre-order right now, this week.
Mike Walsh, thank you very much. Great report from Ireland. Dr. Thayer, your social media, where do people get your writings?
Thayer at Getter, or Bradley Thayer at Truth, or Brad Thayer at X. And Steve, very pleased that you contributed the foreword to Embracing Chinese Communist China, America's Greatest Strategic Failure. Thanks very much, Steve.
Love the book. Ben Harnwell, our audience loves you. Where do they get you?
Thanks so much, Steve. On Getter at Harnwell. And compliments to Bradley Thayer, who picked up the Irish result before the International Bureau today.
Yeah. Lou Dobbs next.
Right now, millions of Americans face prescription medication shortages. The FDA's medication shortage list currently has over 120 prescription medications listed. Some patients are being forced into more expensive substitutes, while others are rationing what little medication they have left. Don't get caught unprepared. That's why I want you to pick up a Jace case today. The Jace case is a pack of essential antibiotics that can treat a long list of common bacterial illnesses, including UTIs, respiratory and skin infections, plus much more. And each case can be customized for your specific needs with dozens of add-on options. Just fill out a simple online form and Jace handles the rest. From the online evaluation to licensed pharmacy delivery and ongoing care, visit jacemedical.com and use code Bannon at checkout for an extra discount. That's promo code Bannon at Jace, J-A-S-E, jacemedical.com. Get the Jace case and get it today. Action, action, action.
That's code War Room at checkout to save 67%. Do it again. War Room Health, all one word, warroomhealth.com. Go there today. You need, if you're going to be part of the posse, you need a strong heart. You need a lion's heart. How we're going to do that is with Salty. Go there. Do it today. Check it out.